If anything happens and I die, I'll be the first one to admit that it was a mistake.
Já, verið velkomin í sjötta þátt gervarpsins. Ég heiti Sigurður, en Eyvindur ekki hjá mér að svo stöttu. En við tókum upp viðtal við einn heimabruggara í Bandaríkjunum sem heitir Robert Stemski og í viðtalinu þá segir hann okkur frá tveim mjög spennandi hlutum annar hvernig við breytum svona bragðlausum bjórum sem í glasinu hjá okkur yfir í algjöra dundur IPA á nokkrum sekundum og hitt málefnið var aðferð til að geta búið til bjór og geymt hann og haft hann tilbúin til gerjunar í langan, langan tíma þannig að ef maður ætlar að ef maður hefur lausan tíma þá getur maður búið til fullt af bjór bara smelt honum til hliðar og geymt hann þangað til að loksins maður hefur tíma eða vill gerja bjórinn þetta getur sparað ykkur alveg ótrúlegan tíma þegar maður kannski sjá fram á að maður vill fá ákveðna tegunda bjór eftir einhverja mánuði eða eitthvað slíkt. Svo gjörðu svo vel, hér viðtalið við Robert.
Hi guys, we have with us a fantastic brewer from the United States of America and he has been doing a lot of cool stuff, some of the stuff that we want to talk about in this show. He's quite the inventor of new techniques and basically fixing whatever ails you in an ordinary bar when you don't have a proper beer. So his name is Robert Stempinski. Am I pronouncing that?
Correct. Well, the Robert you got right.
But yeah, okay.
Stempski. Yeah.
Oh, I'm terribly good. Sorry.
That's all right. It's a good Polish name. I've heard many pronunciations of it.
Right. Do you go by Robert or Bob? Or
either? Bob.
All right.
I'm lazy, so three letters is better than five.
Yeah, yeah. It's easier on the hand.
Six.
Yeah.
I had to put down my drink first. Count the fingers. Yeah,
you could have dropped it.
Oh, no.
So welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us. And the main reason we asked you to come on is because of a thing that you invented, I guess.
Well, you're the person that I accredit it to. So that
yeah.
The first time I heard it, and I have not seen any older references to this than on your page and on the forum when we were chatting some years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm older than dirt, so. it came along with me. I'm sure there's somebody out there that tried something on that same vein many years ago, maybe. But the way I've been doing it is quite unique.
Yeah, and yeah. And we're talking about hop vodka, and we'll ask you to tell us more about it in a while. But maybe our listeners could learn a little bit more about who Bob Stemski is, you know, what you do, how long have you been brewing, and so on?
All right. I started in 2006, and I'm pretty much like everybody else. I'm assuming that I started drinking beer before I was legally of age. But when I started brewing, it was just a simple, actually a mistake. I was looking for a book to brew coffee because I love coffee. And I sent away for a magazine, and the magazine had beer and coffee. And so I said, hey, I'm going for the beer. So I started buying kits through the mail, like many of us, and they're all extract kits. And that was fine. And as I started reading I realized there was more to it, and I went from extract to a partial, where you did do some grain. And then from there, I went to three-vessel brewing. I did that for about a year or so, and I was happy with the results, but somewhere I got an idea that maybe I should go to something different, and then Brew in the Bag happened, and I started brewing with Brew in the Bag, and that to me is the cat's meow, which is an old phrase showing my age, but can't get better than Brew in the Bag.
Yeah, you were one of the early proponents of Brew in a Bag, right?
Yes, at least in the States I was. In Australia it started, as you know, mm-hmm. and I started from that, and once I got going on it, I preached to anybody that would listen. I said, it's a simpler way of brewing. If you want to go and start brewing instead of starting with three vessel and buying all this equipment, and I'm not saying anything bad or wrong about three vessel brewing, but this is a quicker, easier, cheaper way to get into it, and the brew comes out the same, so why not?
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. We both do Brew in a Bag, and most people in Iceland do. It's very rare you see anybody do three vessel over here. Could you tell us a little bit about hop vodka and what it is?
Well, hop vodka came by accident. The first time I made it, it was a result of me brewing some Applejack, which is apple juice from an orchard. And I brewed it up. And I wasn't making Applejack when I started. I was just trying to make a high potent brew out of natural apples. And I got some brewer's yeast, which is sometimes you can get 22% alcohol with it. And I brewed it up. And once I had the fermenter full and it was done fermenting, I thought, you know, all I have to do is freeze this and then drain out the juice, and I'll have Applejack, which is, and I don't know the percentage of alcohol, but it's a higher degree of alcohol. And when I did that, I noticed how clear it was. It was just very clear. There was no sediment in it at all. And it turned out fine. I had a couple of big bottles of some pretty potent apple juice. And he gave you quite a wallop, quite a headache the next day. But the second half of it was that the water that was frozen in there with it held some flavor and a little bit of alcohol, and I drank that up also. But that's what got me on to doing the vodka, because I thought, you know, if this clears it, what if I took vodka and mixed it with some hops and then froze it, and then when I pulled out the vodka again, I would have the vodka flavor without having any of the grit or any of the dirt or anything that's in there. So then I devised this little method of kind of following what I had just explained, and I came up with a pretty nice little method for getting some real good quality flavor. And as you can imagine, I use it for just about everything. I can go through the steps a little bit for you, explain how I do it exactly. What I do now is I use a standard French press. Now, I don't know if this terminology is the same.
All right, yeah, it is.
Yeah, okay. And it's just a standard French press. I put, normally in the U.S., we have 1 ounce packages of the hops, and I don't remember how many grams that is anymore.
28. Okay. Well, for me, it's 30.
Yeah. Yeah. And I put one of those in, and then I fill my, I guess it's a liter, maybe a quart. And then I stir it up. I fill it with vodka, excuse me. And it's a cheap vodka. It's nothing really great. And I stir it up, let it sit for 10 minutes, maybe I come 10 minutes later, stir it up again, and maybe a third time. I'm kind of getting to about a half hour now. I used to do 20 minutes, and I don't know what that is in metric. It's 20 minutes in America, but I don't know.
We of course have a fully, when the time strikes 10, it's a new day.
Yeah.
And they're long days up there. It's like, geez, must be 56 hours between daylight and night and whatever.
It's 3 months right now.
Oh.
Yeah, then we get like 9 months of night. Of night.
Pardon me. Anyway, yes. So after the vodka mixture and hops is in there, then I press it out. I pour it into another bottle. Usually it's a vodka bottle or a gin bottle or whatever I have around. I have a lot of alcohol bottles left over around my house for some reason. And then I do the same process again, but with clear water. So that the second time I do this, and I do it identically, I just fill it with water, let it sit a half hour, stirring it a few times and between, and then pressing it down again, and then I mix these two.
So the water, the same hops again, or do you?
Yes,
all right.
Same hops again. What I'm trying to do is get the alcohol out of the hops because I don't want to leave any alcohol behind.
Okay.
I'm a cheap son of a gun. And I don't want to lose any booze.
Yeah. So it's not. You're not trying to extract that last bit of flavor or
it could happen. It could happen. But it's just that the first half with the alcohol, I believe that solvent works pretty good, but actually water is probably the best solvent on earth. And I try that a second time with that. And then these two are mixed in a bottle. And then I take that bottle and I just put it aside in the refrigerator. I cap it, put it in the refrigerator, and let it sit for anywhere from a week to 2 weeks to 3 weeks if I'm not in a rush for it. And what that does is it lets the little particles that do get into your bottle, they let them, it goes down to the bottom and it sits down there. And then I'll take that bottle and put it in the freezer. In my refrigerator, and within a day or even less, it freezes, or at least it turns to a real mushy slush. And the next step then is I take the cap off the bottle, invert it into a carafe or some other large vessel that'll hold the bottle from falling over. And immediately you'll see the vodka will start dripping, and it'll drip, drip, drip. And as the ice starts to melt, it'll dilute it a little bit. What I do is I let it, I'd say a third of it now, I let it drip into the carafe. And then I'll stop it and I'll pour off that first third into another container. And then I'll continue on with the process and let the It'll be more water based at this point. I let that keep dripping into that jar or carafe, and when that gets pretty much done, then I take the bottle. I take it out because the thing is, you'll see the hops sitting on the bottom of the bottle, and when you invert it, turn it over, then that hops is on top, and it's like a line, and it's coming down towards the neck of the bottle, and you don't want that to go into the bottle. So it's kind of neat in a way, because when you invert it, you actually see the yellow color of the hops and the lupulin and humulin and all those lins, whatever. You see that line going down, and as long as you keep that, put it in the bottle or into the carafe, without getting that gunk in there, you're good. So you end up kind of with two different glasses, one with a real clear pure vodka almost, I suppose. And then you a second glass with a lesser quality. It's maybe a little cloudy by that point, but it's still good. And then I, depending on what I'm doing, I might just keep them in two separate bottles. One crystal clear that I might use. And, you know, I've had it drank it straight, but it's not very good. It's still too harsh, too strong. But the one that's a little cloudy, the second running, the one that's mostly water, that one I usually put into a keg.
And then pour some fresh beer on it.
Yeah. 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 And I've done just about everything you can imagine with it. I've taken a glass of beer and just poured a little bit of the hop vodka, the good stuff in there, and then kind of swish it around and try to extract, you know, smell the different flavors of the individual hops. And I'm doing this with a plain beer. I'm not doing something like a Saison or anything that's got a lot of flavor into it, because I want to taste the hops. In fact, probably the proper way of doing it is just taking a smash beer where you have a very simple grain bill. And you might even have do three or four of these hop vodkas with, let's say, a Cascade or something, and then maybe a Kent Gouldings or a Hallertau or a Tettnang, and try all three of them. I did try some of the Noble hops, and I wasn't very happy with them. I didn't have any fun with it, no kutzpah or anything. It was just blah. I like the Cascades in the C family, the Amarillo hops, the Simcoe, those type of hops that you have, and a lot of the Australian ones with the high alpha and the citrus and the melon. Those are the real fun ones to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the things that I wanted to ask is if you'd ever, you know, because I would imagine that the American and the Australian hops would be the fun ones, but I wondered, you know, could you do a Sots and you know, turn Miller Lite into a nice Pilsner?
Oh, I believe you could. Yeah, yeah. And if you can turn Miller Lite into anything, yeah, that would work. Yeah. I did do size. I had I won a big bag of them, and I had quite a few, so I used some of that, and it was all right. It was good.
All right.
Okay.
So you've mentioned taking the second runnings and putting that into a keg, and I would imagine that the obvious use for the hop vodka is to infuse a flavorless beer,
yes.
So something that doesn't have a lot of flavor, and making it more interesting. As Siggy said in the beginning, you know, if you're at a bar and they don't have any proper beer, and you have your little vial in your pocket, and you can...
that's one of okay. So I have to confess, I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and I've been thinking about like near me, I have no proper. Okay, there's one proper bar where I can get a proper beer, but it's like I don't know, half an hour of walking for me. So it's not really, you know, enticing to go over there. If I could like just take a 2-minute walk to my local cafe or pub or whatever, and turn those alternate beers?
Yes.
I was thinking of an S word, but
yes,
just plain beers. Let's use that. Take those plain beers and turn them into real beers. But then I thought, okay, so if I go to a tidy cafe, you know, everybody's
well
dressed.
And you take out a vial and you're going to get arrested.
I ask for something, you know, then I put my glass down, take a eyedropper.
Yes. Just don't serve it to a woman because you're going to get arrested.
Yeah. That was my thing. I was thinking maybe even get arrested and you know, it's not, I don't get worried about getting arrested. It's the thought of losing the hop vodka.
Yes.
People are going to look at you and say, who roofies themselves?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the obvious one, but you mentioned, adding it to a keg, but are there any other uses for hop vodka?
Well, I've taken it in the bottle to brew fests and we've all shared it. And it's kind of fun to see other guys saying, you know, they drink it straight in a shot glass. And then they try to say, well, can I taste the melon in this one? Or this one is supposed to be pine trees. And some people are very good at that and some aren't. It was kind of interesting trying three different kinds at a local brew club and letting people try it. And that was one use for it. But it's also, you know, there's an element in there where you can take this and maybe do a little experimentation. Like I took just 3 days ago, I ran out of vodka, which is hard to believe, but I tried it with gin, and I'm thinking that gin with the flavor of gin might go good in maybe a saison, and maybe a couple other ideas. But I'm kind of excited to try the one with gin, because then you get the little juniper berry or whatever that's in there. That might make a beer mighty interesting.
Yeah.
And also one thing I thought of, I did do this once and I didn't bring it up earlier, but I did take one time, I heated up a little bit of water and put just a few grams of like Irish moss in there, and then put that in a bottle to try to, and I shook it up and I thought maybe that would clear the bottle a little bit, and it did, but I put a little too much in. Working at that scale, I went from 19 liters down to 1 liter. I kind of miscalculated. I used a fraction of what I thought, and it was still way too much. It turned kind of like glue. But it would help in clearing it, I think. But we'd have to play with that a little bit and just find out, like, half a gram or so.
Right.
Yeah.
Another option would perhaps be gelatin.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, I'm quite an advocate of hop shots. We'll make just normal hop shops. But, you know, if you had three or four or just a couple of hop vodkas and you mixed the gelatin in there, that would be very interesting, too.
Yeah,
because you could take that to a party and you could be eating those things and say, this one's melon, this one's pine.
Yeah,
this one's kind of an earthy flavor.
Yeah. But I mean, also you could use the gelatin to settle out
the particulate.
Oh, that way.
Yeah.
Well, I do that. I do that too. Yeah, I use that quite a bit now lately, actually. But yeah, that's terrific. That would be a good idea. Hop shots.
Hop shots.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
That would be great.
I'm all excited now.
There's a line of experiments that you're going to do for the next year. All these different
flavors.
We're
keeping you busy now.
I'll be unconscious for a good part of the summer. Which is nothing unusual, actually.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Have you done any social experiments with just taking hop vodka out? How do you carry it? Do you have a dropper vial, or how do you measure it?
What I do when I go out, I have a lot of whiskey bottles around here too for some reason, and I just put it in a glass whiskey bottle and take it to the brew fests, or we brew on a lake in winter. I'll take it there, and somebody always walks up to me and says, hey, you got any of that hop vodka? And then we just start sipping it. Some people like to try it straight, but I think it's kind of harsh. It's a little rough going down, but once you start putting in beers, well, then you start playing and start thinking and you think, oh, hey, I wonder how this would taste here and how that would taste there. And it'll go from one extreme to another.
Do you do one hop each time, or do you ever mix it up?
Well, you know, I haven't really mixed it up because normally I'm trying to, really, you know, especially on a new hop that I haven't used before, I'll brew a simple plain ale, and then I'll look to try to find what this hop gives me, you know, and I separate it that way. But I have, to be honest, now that you mentioned it, I have put more than one kind of hop in, but that was kind of a deal where I was near the end of a brew and I had a half a bag of this and a half a bag of that. And then I kind of mixed them together and kind of forgot what I had together. And I just says, well, I'm going to make a hop vodka out of it since I don't know what they are. And it worked out, but it was just for sprucing up a beer. It was no particular flavor or anything.
Yeah. So I'm really intrigued about this, especially regarding trying out new hops and seeing what that does to your beer. Have you experimented with hops? You know, made a bunch of different hop vodkas using different hops and you know, put a bit in maybe a plain beer or a stout or something to get the feel from how this beer would react with this type of hop.
Well, yeah, I have done that, but I haven't done a good experiment of it. In other words, I didn't set up to do it as an experiment. I just had a few beers and I tried it in three or four beers and I found nothing wrong with any of them. In fact, I've had like a Guinness, which you shouldn't have any hop flavor in a Guinness either. It was a clone, I mean, that I made because I have a nitrogen on my refrigerator, nitrogen tap. And I put hop vodka in there. So I made a hoppy Guinness. And it was not bad. It was surprisingly good. So, you know, I someday I probably should do that, but I haven't. I just keep one on hand, and right now I haven't had anything spectacular lately. I mean, it's just been, you know, the Cascade and Sriracha Ace. I like that quite a bit, and I've tried Galaxy, and I'm just using them to spruce up beers. I haven't really done an experiment lately, but with this one with gin, we'll find out. I'm kind of excited about that.
Wonder and if I'm you could. Sure. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking. I wonder if you could make a good cocktail. So if you use it for something different than beer, you know, could you
hop cocktail? Now
hop Collins.
Yeah, hop Collins. There you go. That would be interesting. There's quite a few drinks. I mean, I'm drinking a vodka gimlet right now because that's my time of the day. When you drink beer from 6:30 in the morning till noon, 12 in the afternoon, you're pretty tired of beer by that time. And it's easier for me to crawl to the refrigerator where I have the vodka than it is for me to walk all the way to the other refrigerator. So that's my style.
Do you know... Do you know, have you done any, do you know how long a prepared batch of hot vodka lasts?
Not very long in my house. Not very long at all.
So it never reaches the expiry dates.
No. One time I did kind of forget about it. I put the bottle between some kegs and in the refrigerator, in my kegerator, and I did forget about it. And it sat there for quite a while. I didn't really notice a difference. I did shake it up a little bit because I'm under the understanding that the resin in hops sticks to the sides of the bottle And that's one of the reasons they say that hops kind of loses its potency if you let it sit too long. And I'm thinking that the resin sticks to the side of the bottle, you pour a glass of beer, and the majority of the hop flavor is stuck to the inside of the bottle.
Ah, that's brilliant. So for an IPA, let's say I buy an IPA that's been sitting in the store for a month.
I just
shake it up.
Real good. It'll be great.
I don't know if I'd shake up a live beer, no. But see, therein lies the problem. You really couldn't do it that way.
Yeah.
But technically, I suppose you could shake it up and let it sit for a couple of days, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll find out. We'll find out. That's an experiment worth doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's another interesting topic that we wanted to
unless talk. Unless you have something to add about
that. Well, yeah, that's smart.
Not at the moment. Maybe right in the middle of when you're talking, I'll think of something. I'll just
just interrupt.
Yeah, no problem.
We're used to that.
So, no chill. You're quite the advocate of no chill.
Yes, I am.
Brewing, and so what is no chill? I'm interested.
And no chill is when you take in your beer and or your wort as it's finished. Well, you let it sit a few minutes while you do a swirl or anything, but you transfer it immediately to a sanitized plastic container. And when the wort goes in there, squeeze it a little bit to let the air out, and then you seal it. You put the cap on, screw it on, and that wort will sit there and cool on its own. And then the next day or 2 days later or 3 days later, you can unseal that container and pour the wort into a fermenter and ferment your beer as always. This eliminates having to cool your beer with a immersion chiller, or leaving it overnight if you do that way, or put it in an ice bath and all these other things. The thing is, in the old days, they used to say, "Well, you gotta cool your beer as quickly as possible." Well, the reason they were saying that is because the longer you left it, the more chance you'd get something would fall in your beer, a fly or whatever, and to spoil your beer. But when you run it straight from your kettle into a no-chill container and seal it, it's clean and it'll stay there. And then when there's a cool break or a cold break that forms and it settles in the bottom of the no-chill container, and that even if it's the next day or 24 hours or 36 hours later, that beer will be clear. So when you transfer it with a little plastic pump or anything, it'll be crystal clear.
So you take your beer after you boil it. So we're assuming, scorching hot.
Mm-hmm.
And you maybe let it sit for a small while to settle out the stuff in that needs to fall to the bottom of the vessel. And or the brewing equipment, and then you take that and put it in a plastic container, something like a jerry can, and squeeze the air out, close it up, and in a couple of days you'll get cold break and everything. So cold break isn't only reserved for the 15-minute chillers.
No, it isn't. What we do here, or in Australia or in England or wherever else you're doing it, when the wort cools, most of the time you have your break material and some of your hop material, if you let it loose in there, it'll settle down. I do use Irish moss or a super Irish moss or something like that, and there's other products. But when at the end of 24 hours, everything's settled and it's perfectly clear in there. But you do have to have a proper container. nobody makes a no chill container that's made for it. We've been using whatever we can get. Now, we've had a few companies that have containers that are good up to the boiling point, and they won't melt. But these are pretty thick-walled. They're pretty sturdy. They do collapse a little bit when the suction comes after it cools. But you just can't use any old water container. You have to use something that's heavy-duty, and you really have to check on that. And they seem to hold up pretty good. I've used one. I've had it for, well, since 2007 or so. I did recently drop it in the middle of winter, so I did put a crack in it. But it's a shame because I really loved that one. It cost more money than the others because it was my first one. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I read the instructions, and I said, well, this one seems like it's safe for chemicals and heat and so on. And now I found there's a cheaper one out. I'm using that. Excuse me. I don't like it as well as the other ones, but it works.
Yeah.
So, and I take the no chill for myself. Within a few days, I normally use it, but a lot of the Australians and others, they'll let it go for 6 months or more in that container before they get around to fermenting it.
Really?
Yeah, it's long-term storage. Well, there's been a lot of controversy about it lately because some folks think that because you're in an anaerobic condition and it's sweet, it's sealed, that you could get bacteria in there and then maybe get...
I've heard about botulism.
Botulism, yeah. It was... For some reason, I went to ptomaine poisoning. I don't know where I got that from. But botulism, yeah. Well, no one's gotten sick from it yet. And hopefully no one ever will. But there is technically a chance that if you don't have it cleaned up properly and sanitized, that could happen. But no one to this date has ever had a problem. You know, you're putting boiling wort into a sanitized condition, and botulism comes from spores that are in dirt, you know, earth. And if you don't have it in there, I don't see where you're going to have a problem. So I suppose it's a risk, but 99 times out of 100, you're not going to let it go more than a few days anyway. And then there's no risk whatsoever.
Yeah, so it takes a while to propagate.
Correct, yes, it does. And in the short time that you normally do it, you wouldn't have a bit of a problem with that at all. But in a 6 month or 8 month or something like that, it could happen, but it hasn't to date, and hopefully it never will. But I'll find out, because I have one a few feet behind me that I did in September of last year. And then I have another one identical recipe I did in January, and I'm going to brew again tomorrow, the third exact same recipe, and then I'm going to ferment them
at the same time.
At the same time, I just an hour ago I finished making a batch of starter, and I've got two bags of yeast that I'm going to mix in there, and I'm going to get up a big batch. And then when all three of these are transferred to nice clean containers, I'm going to split the yeast between the three of them, and I'm going to see what happens. So stay tuned.
Yeah, unless we don't hear from you again, then we know yes. that.
Yeah, then we know about the botulism thing.
Yes, and listen, if anything happens and I die, I'll be the first one to admit that it was a mistake.
Yeah.
I suppose why would you want to do a no chill? I suppose the obvious one is if you don't have a chiller.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But what are the other pros?
Well, let me start off by saying is the reason I went to no chill was because I had three batches in a row that went bad. And I had no idea what was going on, and I was scared silly. I thought I had an infection in my in my work area and all that. But it turned out on that last one, I realized that there was a leak in my immersion chiller. I had extended the copper tubes further to keep them further away from the heat source because I had a plastic hose and a couple of times it got too close to the flames. And when I did the extension, I did a poor job on one end of it. And I was actually dripping well water right into my wort as it cooled. Oh. And well water is a bacteria pool if you ever saw one. So that's why I realized that in the third one, I saw the drips go into the pot. And I thought, oh, I bet you that's what it is. And sure enough, that one was infected too. And it was all the same smell. So it was a mistake, you know. And that's what said, you know, I think I'm going to try that no chill thing where I don't have to fool with this immersion chiller anymore. And I also had a couple of other times when people at group brews, when I have my club together, where people would take immersion chiller, they take it out of their beer and put it into the next one. They chill their beer and they take it out, put it in the next one. Mm-hmm. And then they're walking around with the buckets or their pots full of the cooled wort and they don't put a cover on it and everything. And I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of chance of infection with this. So when I went to the no chill, I thought, well, here I've got a high temperature hose. It's the type of hose that you use for pumps. In a fancy system. And I just put that right on the end of my tap and put the other right into my no-chill container, which I store Star San in there. And when I went to that, I said, this is great because once I seal this baby up, and if I don't have the yeast, I can wait 2 or 3 days to go to the store, pick up the yeast, and then start. Or I'm a big believer in reusing yeast. I'll have one fermenter with a particular kind of yeast in there, and I'm kind of waiting for it to finish, and then it finishes. I let it sit another week, and then I draw off the beer, and I've got that nice yeast. Well, then I just open up a no-chill container, pour the wort in there, and then it starts right up because that's one heck of a starter, you know. So if I know I'm going to, and this is the way I work it, I'll start with like a light beer that's using a simple yeast like US04 or 1056 or one of these just American ales type yeast. And then I'll go to a darker beer and I'll keep reusing that yeast each time. And I'll have a no chill waiting for it. A few days.
So exactly when you're finished bottling or transferring beer off from your fermenting bucket or fermenting vessel,
yes,
you can just pour a ready-made beer right on top of that cake and it goes off in 3 seconds.
Pretty close, yes. It's like putting vinegar on flour on top of baking soda. You know, it just, you know, it's really quick.
Okay.
But, you know, you kind of got to use your common sense. You're not going to start with your very first beer and it's a big, dark Baltic ale or something and you've got a porter and then go to a light beer. You've got to start with a light, medium, and then a fuller beer. And I'll reuse those yeast 3 times, you know. In fact, I sometimes take my no-chill container that's been sitting there for 3 or 4 days. I'll uncork it, put the yeast right in there, and let it ferment right in the no-chill container. And there's no problem with that either. In fact, I got a first place with one beer. That I reused the yeast. This is actually a story here. I brewed a beer. I put it in a no chill. The next day or whenever it was cool, I put yeast right into the no chill container. And then I bought a second cap for the no chill. I drilled a hole in it and put a fermentation lock in there, you know, and I just screwed that right on there. And I fermented right in the no chill container. When it was done, I pulled the beer out of there and the yeast cake was still sitting in the no-chill container, I put another beer. It was the same beer, actually. I put it right on top of that, reused that yeast, and that's the beer I won a first place with. It's a black IPA. So not only did I just use one vessel, you know, I reused it twice, and it really worked well.
Nice.
Awesome.
When you do you need to change the recipe formulation for no-chill, for instance, with regards to hops?
A lot of guys do. They put in a little bit less because the time in the no-chill container with the heat seems to bring it out, make it a little bit stronger. So, yeah, some people would put in, let's say, 30% less or 20% less. I kind of stick with the whatever formula or whatever recipe somebody gave me because I like hoppier beers and a little more violent hoppiness. So I'll take a little extra, but some do. Some do. They knock down a little bit less. But I basically, for no-chill, and as well as brewing a bag, I just use whatever recipe somebody gives me, and I work from that.
What about hop flavor and aroma? Do you need to
adjust
that?
Do you notice any differences?
I don't, but I have a very poor taste bud. So I, you know, somebody that's a BJCP judge might be able to pick something out, but I can't. I really can't. Everything seems to be just, whether I was doing a three vessel or a no chill with brew in the bag, it all seems to taste pretty darn good to me.
So you don't. So you don't lose. You don't lose the hop flavor from having the hops in the hot wort for an extended period of time?
Depending. See, now the beer I'm brewing tomorrow, I put in the first wort hops. It's a Simcoe. I put it in as soon as I pull the bag, and I give the bag a squeeze or two, and I throw the hops in right away as they bring it up to the boil. Those are free floating. But near the end, I have a 10, 5, and 0 or flame out addition. I use a hop spider with a bag for those. I let them sit for 5 minutes or so, and then I squeeze those out and bring them out too. So that technically there's only the 1 ounce or so of Simcoe that's free floating in there. And I think most of that might fall out with the Irish moss and sink to the bottom, and then it doesn't get transferred to the no-chill container. But, you know, saying that, the oils that come off of the hops, how they interact with the heat for an hour or so while it's still at very high, I can't say that it doesn't have some effect on that, but I'm not sophisticated enough to tell. It might be a good experiment for you guys to work on.
Yeah. I've heard some guys or some people put hops into the no-chill container.
Yes, they do. And I have also. In fact, I started that way. I read some of the good Australian brewers would try that, and I did. And I'm not saying it makes it stronger. I would kind of think it does, but I haven't noticed that much difference. But again, you're asking me all these questions, and I'm probably the poorest person to talk about flavor or anything because I darn near lost my sense of smell. So I can't pick it up as well, which is why I'm going to have my wife smell that botulism beer from last September. I'm going to make sure that she says it doesn't smell funny.
But does it save you time in brewing?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, that's one of the things with no-chill that other people say. They say it's nice because I can't brew until I get home from work, and then I got to wait and wait, and it takes so long. But if you put brew in the bag with no-chill, as soon as the boil's over, you shoot it right into the note shell, you seal it up, and then you put it away someplace where you're not going to get burned on it. In the wintertime, I bring it in the house. I put it on the concrete floor or on a brick, and I let it radiate the heat into the house to warm it up. And in the summer, I just leave it outside to cool overnight. And then I can inoculate the beer or put the wort into a fermenter anytime I want. So, yeah, a lot of guys like it because when they come home from work, they don't have to wait around with the immersion chiller and cleaning all that up and waiting for it to cool and all that. It's quite convenient. It really does save time. I can do a 3.5 hour brew without even trying. I mean, I could probably even knock it down to 3 hours if I was efficient, but you know, you got to sit around and drink beer, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. That's why I like chilling, you know, cause it's a long time for,
yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we've covered hop vodka.
Yeah.
Everything about it, you know, is it for everybody? Hop vodka? Should everybody have some in stock?
I'd say any real brewer that's a real man should have it.
Okay,
because you got to do the manly thing and make it and then drink a glass. See, that is where you go from a boy into a man, is hop vodka the first time. After that, well, just put it in a beer and drink it. But everybody's going to try it. You know that.
Yeah. But I mean, also, I mean, even if you're not a brewer, I think, you know, anybody who's into craft beer and who likes flavorful beer should have it on hand.
Yeah. It isn't going to hurt. You know, it's sitting around for a long time. It might evolve into different flavors slightly or whatever.
Yeah. But who knows?
Who knows? Maybe I'll wear ice cream.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Simcoe ice cream. I like that.
That would be good.
That would be nice.
Unless it curdles or something, but I might just try that tonight with that gin hop vodka. Oh, man. You guys make me think now.
Yeah.
Sorry. We're sorry about that.
It doesn't happen that often. Usually when I start thinking, then smoke comes out of my ears.
Yeah, we're not doing this on video, so that's fine.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you.
So all of these clouds that we're seeing right now.
Nobody's going to see that.
Yeah. We'll just have to take a photo.
Yeah. You can take a photo of two olives with garlic in them. Oh, man, those are good.
That sounds nice. Well, I think we've covered everything. So, Bob Stemski, thanks so much for your time and for your stories.
It's a pleasure to be here anytime.
Yeah, all right. Fantastic.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right. You're welcome.
Hold on.
Yeah.
One question that I totally forgot. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to say thanks, or if they want to ask you some questions about hot vodka or gin or anything in general, an old chill, or check up on you after
the botulism adventure.
Yes.
Where can people reach you?
You can get a hold of me. Just go to stemski.com.
All right.
I'll spell it for you, STEMPSKI.
All right. We'll put that in the show notes.
And you get a hold of me there, or I spend most of the day at biabrewer.info.
Fantastic.
So it's,
you can figure that out.
Brew in a bag. We'll post the links to those right. Two places in the show notes.
Well, that's wonderful.
And I've seen you hang out in the BAB group on Facebook as well.
Yeah,
I do occasionally there too. I can't spread myself too much thinner, but I do go there. Yeah. I always read it, even if I don't get involved so much, because there's so many good brewers there. You're in there and you're always correcting everybody and fixing them up. You don't need me.
All right. And on these forums, what do you call yourself?
Bob Brews.
Bob Brews.
Yobi Brews.
Okay, so fantastic. So if people want to, if you want to find Bob and say hi to him and thank him for this, be sure to head out to buyabrewer.info and say hi to Bob Brews.
All right.
Fantastic.
I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Bob.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure doing your show.
Yeah. Always a pleasure having you.
and I do listen. I have a lot of problem with the language sometimes, but when you're in English, I listen.
Fantastic. That's awesome to hear.
And you did a great job in Basic Brewing Radio when you were there. I was very, very good. If anybody hasn't heard you there, you should go and listen.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You did a good job.
All right.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye.
Jæja, mér fannst þetta alveg ótrúlega skemmtilegt viðtal. Ég verið alveg að fá að segja það. Hann, Robert, æðislega skemmtilegur og hann er svo hugmyndafrjór að það bara gerð svona, sko, ég á bara ekki orð. Ég veit að Eyvindur skemmti sér alveg konunglega líka. En nú langar mig að fá að heyra í þér hlustandi góður og það sem að ég vil að þú gerir að þú farir á hlaðvarp.is/gervarpið og finnir þennan þátt og skrifir athugasemd. Ég vil fá að heyra hvort að þú ætlar að gera hopp, vodka eða ekki. Og það var rosalega gaman að fá athugasemd. Nú ef þú átt mynd þar sem þú ert að búa til hopp, vodka, þá það ennþá betra. Og mér þætti alveg ótrúlega gaman að fá að sýna myndina ef að mynd eða myndband ef að þið eru að fara að búa til hopp vodka nú en ég þakka fyrir áheyrnina að sinni þið geti náði okkur á gervarpið@gmail.com blessa sinni